Massed regiments of the Empire held the centre of the line. Tens of thousands of infantrymen stood marshalled in proud battle order, awaiting the bugle to advance and relieve their kinsmen in the raging melee that dominated the battlefield between the two hosts. The proud colours of the 10 provinces were emblazoned with circuits and standards across a dozen leagues of unbroken files. Knights from more noble orders than Felix could name cantered their bulky armoured steeds between the blocks of state troops, pennons snapping from the raised tips of their lances as they rode into an evil wind. The rear ranks bristled with ordnance. Their flanks were ridden on the one side by the shining knights of Britannia, with their intricately fashioned armour and brightly caparisoned destriers, and on the other by the hemp-clad horse nomads of Kislev. Some instinctive understanding told Felix that he was witnessing the last ride of two once-proud martial nations. Allies since the Age of Sigmar, a smaller force of dwarfs anchored the imperial position with guns and Gromril. Resolute blocks of heavy infantry in flowing mail and winged, visored helms, picked out with gemstones and gold, presented a wall of shields around a corps of artillery and missile troops. The distances involved were great, but Felix thought he recognized their leader. Draped in a cloak of dragon scales and wearing his orange-dyed hair in a fierce crest, there could be no mistaking Ungrim Ironfist, the Slayer King of Carrick Cadrin. The Dwarf King led from the heart of his shield wall, hacking open wave after wave of beastmen and chaos warriors, enveloped in a strange aura of flame. Looking beyond the dwarf position, things became strange. Random visions? Prophecy? It was too outlandish to be a dream. Crowding the ghostly cobblestones beside their ostensibly mortal enemies was a raucous host 10 times more numerous than that of the Empire and the dwarfs combined. The greenskins filled the air with noise. Hulking leather-skinned brutes beat on man-skin drums. Prancing goblins wearing nothing but piercings and glitter played manic tunes on bone pipes and led their followers in shrill, exuberant chants. Every second that Felix watched, thousands of crooked arrows whooshed from goblin bows. Rickety trebuchets flung boulders high into the air, while impatient lines of goblins with spiked helms and hand-sewn wings waited for their turn to be catapulted across the battlefield. Felix picked out the greenskin's commander, where the fighting was fiercest, and the monstrous champions of chaos pushed hardest. An immense one-eyed black orc, all welded iron plate and dark green muscle, wading into the chaos ranks with saliva drooling from his tusks and every appearance of a brutally straightforward joy. The war boss's host was clearly far beyond his ability to fully control, bits of it charging forward and withdrawing again almost at random. A tattered sleeve at the edge of a fine mail coat, flapping, nevertheless, in the face of a common enemy. Dumbstruck by this improbable alliance, Felix turned back to the Empire force, and beyond it to the opposite flank, where, if that were possible, something even stranger lined up in order of battle. A gleaming spear line of tall elven warriors held a tide of marauders at bay, handling their long weapons with a graceful, almost elegant ruthlessness. Their presence alone was not so strange. There was precedent for the armies of men and elves coming together in times of great strife, but what was strange was the sheer diversity of elven forces that had been deployed to the same field together. Lean, knife-chinned warriors in leather chitons and circuits of nightshade purple shared ranks with princely spearmen in silver-blue scales, and with others that shunned armour altogether, lightly tanned and garbed in jerkins of autumnal leaves. Longbows and reaper crossbows spoke the common language of death in a single chorus. Felix didn't know what could have reunited such a bitterly divided race, but as he watched, an enormous black dragon swooped over the elven lines, bearing with it an iron-clad elf lord and a streaming wake of shadow. Felix felt out the dragon-head hilt of his sword, but the weapon didn't stir. It was possible that the beast was too far away to arouse the blade's killing instinct, or perhaps all of this was less real to Caragul than it was to him. Just at that moment, he wished he could share some of its steel ambivalence. Because there, At the far end of the battle line, under the stretched mirage of a vintner's awning, there hovered an entity more puissant and terrifying than anything the massed legions of chaos could conjure. Through a pall of unnatural darkness strode a skull-faced titan, suspended above earth that atrophied under his step by a buffer of dark magic, an unconscious manifestation of a power too absolute for even that dread figure to fully contain. That being's battlefield was a lifeless wasteland that none other shared, for whenever even the mightiest champions of chaos rode against him, men fell and rose again to swell his unliving legions. A name, an imprecation familiar to every passing student of the Forbidden, trembled blindly into Felix's hindbrain and screamed, "Nagash." "What's happening here?"
"The inevitable,"
said a dry, subtly condescending voice from the spot beside him in the ranks. In defiance of logical reason and everything he remembered seeing around him a moment before, an elf mage now stood there amongst the crossbowmen. This one Felix knew personally. He was tall, as all elves were, but extraordinarily thin and pale, with skin that was almost translucent on the bone. His face was narrow and haughty, his almond-shaped eyes crystal pale and almost cruel. Teclis, High Law Master of the White Tower of Ulthuan. The mage shrugged.
"The singularity. The end of everything that has come before."
Felix listened with half an ear, eyes wide to the carnage all around him. A unit of chaos warriors whose armor wept blood marched behind a screen of thrashing spawn into the roaring teeth of the Empire guns. A squadron of elf knights in fluted, scythe-edged armor and mounted on reptilian steeds fled from a fierce melee involving warriors of at least 7 different races, only to be overrun and pulled down by a pack of baying demon hounds. Even the skies were not spared. Magic crackled through the clouds, Pegasus knights and elven hawk riders arrowing through the arcing spell effects to engage the enemy's flyers. The din was overwhelming, a demoralizing weapon in its own right. Everywhere there was something happening, something dying horribly and noisily. It was too much to take in as a whole.
"What happened to Middenheim? Where's Cat?"
"You have a strange set of priorities, given the circumstances. If you could only imagine what I have given for the cause, if there was a way to make you fathom the depths of my sacrifice, then perhaps you would understand."
"Is this about what happened to Ulthuan?" The elf produced a disparaging sneer.
"You still don't understand."
A resigned murmur passed through the crossbowmen. The clatter of gear, the near-audible clenching of teeth and hardening of hearts. A new sequence of flags had been lofted onto the vexillary's signal pole. A plain white flag, bearing the symbol of a crossbow. Then 2 fluttering triangles beneath it, blue and white for Middenheim.
"Orders are advance!"
the unit sergeant yelled, then put a whistle to his mouth and sounded the march. The crossbowmen started forward, and Felix, caught in the momentum of events he could neither comprehend nor control, moved with them. He looked in the direction they were headed and clutched his sword in fear. Without any formal warning of the emergence of so gross an anomaly, a vast silver portal now swirled over the center of the Chaos Legions. Distortions in the ether arced around its aureole, spreading out to become tears, claw rents in reality, as Felix in his limited way understood it. Through those tears, a shadow bled through. Watching it was somehow more horrifying than anything he had yet seen on this battlefield. It was sitting in the hold of a ship and watching salt water pour in. It was standing in line for the noose. It was the same shadow that had stalked him through the great forest and the middle mountains, and had almost been his doom but for Max Schreiber. It was death. It was inevitability.
"What am I looking at?"
"Time is much like war. Eon-long stretches of nothing, or what I came to consider nothing, but always moving forward, always going here."
"I don't understand."
"He's saying you have a choice to make, Felix."
The cloaked seeress from his dream marched at his other hand. The pair of elf and mutant apparently perfectly innocuous within a marching file of Middenheimer crossbows.
To save a world or not?
What kind of a choice is that?
Not the one you think it is,
the seeress replied sadly.
Who are you?
Felix shouted over the pound of boots and the blister roar of gunfire.
Whose side are you on anyway?
Teclis laughed bitterly.
She is here with you, isn't she?
The elf pointed his moon-tipped staff towards the massed enemy formations. Felix looked as directed. For a moment he didn't see. The enemy was simply too numerous to pick out one from the horde. But then he glimpsed the shaggy grey giant in battered plate that rose head and shoulders above the melee. Kargash Fell hacked down orcs and men from horseback, his massive warhorse champing shoulder to shoulder with that of another mighty warlord. His blued armor was fantastically ornate and blazed with mystic runes that made him shimmer like a mirage. Arik Demonclaw tore through all that opposed him with axe and lance. Felix quailed to see the two warriors side by side, and fighting in concert, they appeared unstoppable. They were also not alone. Everywhere Felix looked, he saw old enemies fighting to undo the world that he had hoped to leave for his children. The great red dragon, Scalandir, soared over the battlefield as though it owned it, torrents of flame roasting through the eagle and hawk riders that buzzed around its bulk like insects. The necromancer, Heinrich Kemmler, skulked behind the lines, raising a regiment of zombie warriors here, dismantling a lesser spellcaster's bone construct there. From atop a horned bell that was mounted on a kind of chariot, and pushed into battle by a tide of red-armored Skaven elites, Grey Seer Thankwall chittered commands. The Ratman sorcerer squealed in delight as the iron-shod wheels of his chariot ground over orcs and goblins, intoxicated by the volume of warpstone he had consumed, and gleefully vaporizing those that tried to flee with bolts of warp lightning from his claws. Without realizing it, Felix's thumb had moved from his sword grip to the ring on his finger, feeling over the indents made by the dwarf runes that banded it. There were so many things he had never said to her. He would have given his right arm just for the chance to say goodbye, would gladly have offered his life if it meant he could hold her once more. He was being a foolish and sentimental old man, he knew, and worse, the romantic he'd always feared he was. This wasn't real. Cat wasn't real. The tramp of feet bore Felix on, the tick of a clock, the running of sand, of blood. The Middenheimer's armor shimmered under the portal's radiance, each man a ripple in a pool, reflecting the moonlight. Felix wondered what other worlds and strange horrors lay beyond it, then decided that he really didn't want to know. He didn't want anyone to have to learn, because it was real. "I have a choice to make. Then take me back to Gotrek so I can put an end to this. That's what everyone wants. One last adventure. Isn't that the way this is supposed to be?" The sorcerer and the seeress shared a weighted look. He closed his eyes and bent his mind towards his will. "Take me back." A hot wind blew cinders in Felix's face. He opened his eyes. He was back in Newmarkt, but this time overlooking it from the fortified rooftop on which he'd previously spotted Cat. The wooden wreckage of a ballista crunched underfoot as he moved to the edge. The Merlons wore blackened, tormented silhouettes of men and women, immortalizing the moment they were burned alive. Felix could taste bile in his mouth. It was as if this position had been hit with a fireball. He placed his hands onto the heat-deformed crenellations and leaned out. The gates were smashed, the stones around them continuing to smoulder. Islands of flame dotted the courtyard, like candles in a mausoleum, burning for the dead that littered the space. Fire reflected off broken windows, from ruptured breastplates and split helms, from fallen blades, from the tiniest morsel of bare steel on the arrowheads protruding from dead men's backs. Felix felt his eyes weaken in the dancing light, his vision blurred. Was this one last cruel test to gauge his reaction to the reality of what the forces of chaos would leave behind? Felix pinched the tears from his eyes and sniffed.
"I'm sorry, Cat. I never should have left you in the first place.
I should have died by your side defending Altdorf.
And who would that have helped exactly?
Felix's fingers almost bored into the stonework. That voice. His heart sang, but part of him wouldn't allow it to believe. He kept his eyes on the pyres. I don't see that it would have done too much harm either. In fact, from where I'm standing, I don't think it would have made any difference at all.
You saved Max.
He might still be alive if I hadn't.
I doubt he saw it like that.
Felix sighed and hung his head. Then he turned around. Cat stood in front of him. Her hair had been badly roughed up, the silver lock over her left eye stained red. Her leather armor and fabric pads were scorched, and several pieces were missing. There was no sign of any other survivors. "Are you really Cat?" he asked, looking her up and down and wondering why he had to do something as stupid as ask that question. "You're not about to tell me I have a great and terrible destiny."
"You do have a destiny, Felix," said Cat, taking his hand in hers and looking up into his eyes. "And it doesn't involve me. But I don't regret being touched by it, even if it was only for a little while."
Felix smiled through his tears, holding her hand tightly and pulling her to him as though the beating of his heart against her chest would make her reel. Suddenly all of the things he had wanted to do or say boiled down to nothing. This was enough. This moment. Cat moved closer until they touched hip to hip, nothing but a fiercely clenched hand between them. She smiled shyly and turned her body against his, revealing a woolen sling nestled between her quiver and the padded back of her gambeson. From within, a pair of crystal-bright blue eyes peered curiously out from a pudgy face, topped with a sprinkling of white blonde hair. Felix had no experience in these things, but he guessed that the baby must have been just under a year old. The child babbled brightly and smiled as Felix smiled, reaching out with a small hand to grasp his cheek. It actually rather hurt, but Felix didn't care. His heart had melted and turned to gold.
"My daughter."
"Rosa Jaeger," said Cat softly,
voice fading as the world around them returned belatedly to darkness.
"Say hello to your father."
Chapter 17. The First Slayer. Felix came to, his eyes welcoming back the red-gold pulse of rune light with a smile so bittersweet that it ached all the way to the pit of his stomach. It had all been a fantasy, a trial devised by some uncaring rune guardian. But in his heart it felt real. He had been there for his wife when it mattered. He had been with her at the death. He had seen his child. To hell with destiny. He closed his eyes again to hold on to the ache for just one moment more.
"Get up, manling. It gets worse."
Felix buried his face in his palms and groaned as he sat up, then dragged his hands down his cheeks as if they might collapse into despair without bracing. The slayer stood with his axe head on the ground and his scratched hands overlaying one another over the haft. His fingers rhythmically flexed and clenched, a tick that in anyone else Felix would have described as nervous. His one eye swept over a patch of ground in front of his feet, his lips muttering quietly as though he were in deep meditative prayer. Felix glanced over Gotrek's shoulder. His hand slid away from his face, no longer supported by his hanging jaw. Now he understood. Behind Gotrek, there loomed another slayer, but one so truly massive that he made Gotrek look frail by comparison. He was a head taller, the extra height accentuated by a blade of bright red hair, and with muscle enough packed into his awesome frame to wrestle down a mountain. Looking at him, Felix was aware of a sense of destiny, as if more had gone into his being than should have been possible given the size, impressive as it was, of his body. He wore heavy leather boots and a kilt of iron plates sewn together with bronze rings. Other than that, and a few spiked piercings along one side of his neck and the adjoining shoulder, the dwarf went bare-skinned. Tattoos crisscrossed his body, but in contrast to the intricate designs inked onto Gotrick's skin, these were atavistic, branching blue lines that traced an endless spiral around his muscular frame. The big slayer set an enormous rune axe against his shoulder and studied Felix with eyes of an eternal, ever-wrathful blue. Felix could have lost himself in that gaze. The gaze of a god. Felix glanced nervously at his companion.
Is that...
Aye, Manling, said Gotrick gruffly. This time it really is.
Horsemen careened down the mountain slope, setting off a miniature avalanche of ice and scree. The earth was never deep this high in the mountains, and the thin crust of topsoil concealed a hard layer of permafrost. The air was semi-frozen, thin enough to make filling one's lungs in one breath a challenge. The tribesmen seemed to revel in it, throwing ice almost playfully from their ponies' fetlocks, drawing down the fur-lined leather flaps of their helms and grinning, grizzled brown faces glowing with body warmth. A posse of red-faced and hard-breathing riders reined in as they thundered towards Morzana. Their animals snorted gamely, pawing at the frost. Morzana shook scattered ice from her sleeves and smiled, using Nergui's eagle staff as a walking pole to climb the rest of the way to meet them. Kargash Fell had been right to be proud of his people. Their fearlessness and tenacity was matched only by their enthusiasm, and it was infectious. Despite the fate she had always known awaited her in the Slayer Fortress.
Temugan claims to have seen the skyship as it entered the clouds, prophetess. There.
The rider who spoke, a sunken-cheeked warrior with a broad grin and fiery yellow eyes, creaked about in the saddle and pointed up to the sky. The wind riffled through the long sleeves of his black silk vest, worn as an underlayer to a sleeveless shirt of lamellar leather scales.
He marked this spot and has not removed his eyes from it in 6 hours.
Have you found a way up?
There is none to be found, prophetess,
the rider declared, delivering what he must have known was crushing news, and doing so without even the recognition that he should be fearful. Men did things differently on the eastern steppe.
Leave me. I must think on this. And tell Temugan he may rest his eyes.
You are kind and powerful, mighty prophetess,
cried the horseman, already chivying his mount around and galloping off with his arban. The men rode to join the host of fur-swaddled tribesmen that mustered in the high valley. Several dark lines laced the mountains to the south, more of Kargash Fell's vast host filing in through the dozens of unwarded roads and goat trails their scouts had been able to uncover.
I do try to be, when I can,
Morzana murmured after they had gone, speaking to the frigid air.
Your enduring capacity for compassion provides me an eternal wellspring of succor, my child, the air answered back. How it pleases me to experience your broken heart and dashed dreams over and over again.
I do not dream.
Laughter's echo rang in her ears.
I trust that you are ready for the end.
Morzana looked up the craggy barren scarp that stoic Temugan had marked, her gaze following the incline until rock faded into cloud and ultimately disappeared altogether. There was a fortress up there. She could feel the power emanating from it, but even with that to aid her, she doubted whether she had the ability to transport more than just herself over so great a distance by magical means. And any fortress of dwarf make, particularly this one, would have potent runic wards woven into its design to prevent just that kind of solitary raid. It worked both ways, of course, and this particular citadel had been constructed as much with the aim of trapping things within as presenting a defense against those without. She bared her fangs. It might as well have been on the moon.
There is always a way. There must be, for I have seen myself there, as I have seen you. I need time to consider it. There are limits to my skill, Dark Master.
For you, perhaps, but not for me. Not here. Here the fabric of the mundane is pierced by the divine. Can you feel it, Morzana? The end times begin now, and neither earth nor sky shall ever be as they were again.
A ripple of power passed through the air, an in-breath that broke over the hollow silhouette of a bat-winged demigod. The Dark Master was revealed for the briefest of moments, before folding back under the surface layers of reality. As with the mountain topsoil, the boundaries between planes were thin here, worn fine enough by the waxing of chaos that Belakor was almost capable of manifesting his own form. The origins of Belakor's curse of immateriality predated the written word, at least in human culture, but she had seen pictographic slabs buried in prehistoric ruins under the frigid marshes of Albion that alluded to a dark master, and read texts unearthed from the elven ruin of Oriaga that purported to be the translation of a proto-Kemrian oral myth, of a champion of such malevolent ambition that he was stripped of his physical form by his god. Tzeentch himself had done this, and now, one layer at a time, Belakor was undoing it. A greater demonstration of her master's power she did not need, but from the rumble shaking the permafrost beneath her feet, she feared she was about to receive one. This one wasn't for her. This was for the world. The ground had begun to shake, stones running down slope until, as the force of the quake intensified, great boulders were torn from the mountainside and sent crashing down. The sound of several thousand men crying out in unison momentarily overwhelmed even the shaking earth. Morzana turned towards the muster ground, looking on in mortification as one of the mountains across which columns of men were still marching shook itself apart. Millions of tons of rock collapsed in on itself, as though its foundation had just been ripped away. Men were still screaming, but it was no longer possible to hear them over the crash of rock. Another mountain split up the middle and fell apart, town-sized slabs of earth tumbling away. Morzana stood speechless. To whom did one pray when gods walked amongst you? The ground lurched, almost hurling Morzana from her feet. Her slight build spared her. Hundreds of tribesmen and horses were less fortunate, tossed aside as another peak at the far south end of the valley vented the phenomenal internal strain with a magmic eruption that blasted its summit apart. Morzana dropped, sinking her claws down to the permafrost and feeling the ground's tormented shudder. It bucked, throwing Morzana up and then rising up to meet her. She slammed back down, still rooted by her claws, and then looked up. The Khazad Drengazi mountain was falling away before her eyes, but it wasn't collapsing. The valley was rising. She had heard of cabals of the ancient Slan conducting such earth-shaping rituals, but never had she believed that any individual alive today could perform them. Belakor's power waxed with the onset of the end times, and with his proximity to the demon gate locked away within the Slayer Fortress, he was close to the godhood he had long craved, and he was getting closer.
"Your only task is the Slayer Monks," said Belakor, his voice the roar of upthrusting rock. "Theirs is the power to summon the wrath of Grimnir, and that is an encounter I am not ready for." The screams of 10,000 pierced the clouds as the valley floor drove them higher, the laughter of black gods welcoming their terrified souls to the heavens.
"Yet." "Grimnir," Felix breathed, gazing up into the lean, brutal face of the dwarf, who looked down on him in return with something between godly indifference and outright hostility. "But he's a... isn't he a..."
"Those are the times you are living in, Madling," Grimnir answered gravely, his voice a rumble redolent of war wagons heading into hostile mountains, the rising clamour of a call to vengeance. Felix simply stared. He had been hearing tales of Sigmar's second coming since before his departure from Altdorf, and in truth had not given them great credence. Even after all he had seen, it seemed unlikely. If the gods cared enough to intercede in their faithful's affairs, then why wait until things were as bad as this?
But it was one thing to hear a story of a distant war in a foreign province from a barfly who had himself seen neither. It was quite another to find oneself within the undeniable aura of the divine. He gazed up, certain that his body was shrinking, or that the ground was drawing him under.
"You don't sound much like I'd imagine a god talking," said Felix,
gawking like a country maid before a civic parade of Reichsguard knights in shining armour.
"Nothing's forever, lad. I wasn't always thus, and perhaps I won't always be."
With that, the vengeful ancestor dismissed him and turned to Gotrek.
"You're a true slayer, Gotrek, a credit to my name. 10 millennia ago, I left a mighty power here, and a burden, waiting for my heir in the end times. You've proven yourself well worthy of it, and capable of bearing it."
Gotrek bared a grin. Felix couldn't blame the dwarf for being pleased. It wasn't every day one came in for personal praise from their god.
"Grimnir," Felix absently repeated.
Ignoring him, the ancestor raised an arm like a felled and muscularly carved oak, and pointed through the lines of pillars to the door that the Slayer Abbot had initially led them through.
"The realm of chaos. It's not a place you can describe to one who's never seen it. What lies beyond that door, I've fought the last 10,000 years to keep out. But these are the end times, and my strength wanes. And you've my leave to pass, son of Gurney."
"Isn't that the way out?"
Felix hissed, leaning in towards Gotrek.
"This is Grimnir's path, manling," Gotrek muttered,
looking almost embarrassed to be explaining this in the ancestor's presence.
"There is no way out from here."
"Oh," said Felix, sitting with his arms around his knees while he processed that small but, on reflection, rather pertinent piece of information. "But the abbot left, and they locked it, didn't they?" Gotrek shook his head, despairing of Manling's simple-mindedness. "Well, no matter, as Collier would undoubtedly have said had he been here. It wasn't as if there was much left for any man where they had come from." He thought of his wife and daughter. He had been prepared to offer his life for a glimpse of them, and whether out of compassion or cruelty, he had been granted it. If they did still live, then if there was anything he could sacrifice to buy them one more hour of freedom, of happiness, or even simply of life, then Felix would give it in a heartbeat.
"Pick yourself up," said Gotrek. "We've not found what we came for yet."
"Not him,"
Grimnir rumbled, as Felix leaned into his haunches as a preliminary to the ever-worsening task of standing up.
"You proved yourself worthy, Gotrek. He did not. He's sentimental. He doesn't understand the scale of this war, the sacrifices that must be made." "He's a dwarf friend and a rememberer," said Gotrek. "That's all you need to know."
Grimnir's eyes flared, his upper body somehow swelling even further as the ancestor closed both hands around the haft of his axe. A rumble passed through the pillars like vibrations through the skin of a drum, disturbing the moonlight. Felix swallowed, feeling abysmally small. The mountain itself seemed to tremble around him.
"You would argue with me?"
Gotrek glanced at Felix, then set his jaw. Blood trickled from unhealed cuts as he squared his shoulders to his ancestor.
"On this, I would."
"For once in your life, Gotrek, be sensible. It's Grimnir, for pity's sake."
Suddenly, the only thought in Felix's head was the words that the mutant seeress had spoken to him in his dream.
"You are powerless against the opponent that awaits you in Khazad Drengazi, Felix, and Gotrek's passing will be the doom of this world."
This was the place, and something frantic in the back of Felix's brain told him that it was mere minutes from the time. Urgency filling his veins with fire, he got up to stand at his companion's side.
"It's all right. I'll wait here for you. Or find another way out if I can."
"No one calls my rememberer unworthy. He as good as says it of me as well."
With a chuckle that could have cracked an anvil, Grimnir stomped a few paces back and raised his axe.
"Then come, Gotrek Gurnison. Bloody your axe if you can."
Gotrek readied his axe, tension singing from every sinew, his one eye sparkling with the ruddy gold of runelight. If Felix didn't know better, he'd think that a part of the Slayer was secretly pleased that it had come to this. What greater challenge of his prowess could there be? What greater doom?
"But it may be enough to save the next."
That was what the seeress had said next. But what did that even mean?
"Stop this!" Felix shouted, no longer caring that he spoke out of turn before a god. "You'll die here if you don't!"
Gotrek ignored him completely, and Grimnir merely laughed.
"A true slayer is more than just the manner of his doom or the measure of his disgrace. He is an aspect of me. His sacrifice is an echo of my purpose. And you are a true slayer, Gotrek. Perhaps the last great slayer."
As if that were a challenge that he could not allow to go unanswered, Gotrek launched himself at the ancestor with a roar. Too quick for a dwarf of his physicality and power, Grimnir slid aside, his axe licking out with seeming nonchalance, but with sufficient force to beat aside Gotrek's blade and send the slayer spinning off balance. Gotrek adjusted quickly, swapped his axe out of his ringing hand, growled to mask his surprise, and came again. What exactly happened next, Felix couldn't say for certain. Grimnir unleashed a blizzard of blows that Gotrek must have somehow managed to parry simply because he remained standing throughout. Felix could not imagine how the Slayer managed it. At times, it was as if the ancestor possessed eight arms, and watching them as they went about the business for which Grimnir was lauded was like trying to track the wings of a dragonfly in flight. The entire fight lasted perhaps 10 seconds from first blow to last. Felix couldn't be sure. His mind had slowed to a crawl, numbed by the speed and fury expended before his eyes. But what happened after, Felix felt he had always known. He was watching prophecy unfold. The vengeful ancestor swept his star metal blade across Gotrek's body and then held it there, high, head bowed. Everything seemed to stop. Felix's heart lurched between beats. He saw the blood glisten on the rim of Grimnir's raised blade. Then, with a painful physical sensation of acceleration, time resumed. Gotrek was torn from his feet and spun half around. There was no resistance, no effort to regain his feet and fight again. The Slayer slapped to the ground like a side of red meat. His axe clanged down behind him with a funereal knell. The dwarf lay on his side. Blood speckled his tattoos and formed a spreading pool under his savage chest. Felix stared at his friend's face in horror. Perhaps it was this place, this palace of vengeance, or perhaps it was the company, but Felix could feel his pulse hammer behind his ears, and he felt the terrible urge to empty his lungs, beat his chest, and rage at the utter, utter stupidity of the universe. This was one too many. Gotrek Gurnison was dead. Chapter 18. Last Stand. The valley floor rose above the outer wall of Khazad Drengazi like the mighty crest of a wave. It even caught the sun like one, foaming as it did with the steel glint of marauder mail and weapons. Gustav Jaeger gaped as the impossible was redefined before his disbelieving eyes. Off to the left, across the cloud sea, a mountain crumbled in slow motion, sinking straight down under the surface. The very earth beneath them seemed to be shaking itself apart. His lamellar plate rattled violently as he gripped the crenellations of the citadel's innermost defensive ring. Dwarfs in ringmail togas dashed past in both directions, yelling their own special gibberish, despite the fact that no one could hear a thing over the birthing roar of a new mountain, and what felt like the death rattle of the old. The growing mountain rose higher, blotting out the sun over the citadel's gatehouse, and casting a long shadow over a swathe of the lower wards. More Slayer monks ran from the creeping shadow like ants from rising floodwaters, bearing nothing but their odd clothes and their weapons, and fleeing for the next level of fortifications. Gustav could feel his bones vibrating against each other. He ground his teeth, but they chattered anyway. The rising mountain leaned in, and slowly, inevitably, like a hewn oak, it began to topple towards the gatehouse. Gustav mewled something prayer-like, throwing himself down to hug the solid marble crenel as the fantastical tonnage of rock crashed over the gatehouse, flattening it as though it were made of sand and obliterating the curtain wall utterly. The ancient stonework of the inner ring sanded his cheek as it shook. Compacted rock piled into the citadel, layering strata and substrata and a hot metamorphic core, as the sheer weight and pressure caused parts of the avalanche to glow red and vent steam. The surface layer rushed forward, like a breaking wave racing up a beach, demolishing walls and buildings alike as it went. Tiny by comparison were the men and horses that rode the wave. Gustav fancied they were screaming, but of course it was impossible to hear. Hundreds were thrown off and crushed, but there were more than enough left behind to overwhelm the score or so dwarfs that haunted this deceivingly mighty citadel. The rock wave ploughed down the second curtain wall, exhausting the last of its momentum to spill over into the grand empty streets that lay beyond. For a moment there was calm, the universe taking a breath to realign itself to the new arrangement. Rubbled buildings settled, loose rock tumbled back downhill. Then there was a cry, exuberant and shrill, and a horde of terrified-looking marauders surged through the breaches and into the citadel's second level. Horsemen spurred ahead, galloping uphill towards the next gate and loosing arrows at the barest hint of a dwarf. Gustav lifted himself from the crenel, watching as a group of Slayer monks wielding a combination of axes and flails, hammers and maces, each with a weapon in either hand, charged from a ruined building and mowed through the flank of a marauder column. Their ferocity was tremendous, and Gustav clenched his fist and gave a small cheer as he saw one amongst their number hammer down the ebony-armoured chaos warrior that had been leading the marauder's advance. Even as he allowed himself to imagine that the monk's efforts might buy the defenders of the third wall a few minutes, a skirmishing line of horsemen thundered behind the infantry column, firing at the gallop and riddling the brave dwarfs with murderously accurate bow fire. The resistance crushed. The marauders roared and marched on. A loud bang from immediately by his left ear startled Gustav from the nightmarish scene. He turned, a sulphurous pillow of smoke smothering him for a moment and then wafting by. Malachi McCason dropped his long rifle to the crenel and reloaded, shouting something incomprehensible to the Slayer Abbot, who stood beside him with his twin axes crossed over his chest as he did so.
Arshuk Akaz Arak, Gilmhad Herkul Al Ikrim,
the Abbot growled back.
It's rude to talk in a language we can't all understand,
Gustav shouted, a little hysterical and not at all sure he shouldn't be. The engineer hefted his loaded long rifle and swung it around as if to take a pot shot at Unstoppable, floating like a silver cloud above their heads. His red glimstone sight played across the airship's prow until the aiming dot found the splintered view screen for the bridge. There, McCason waved his hand through the beam in a sequence of sharp cuts and brief pauses, dots and dashes.
"I was just asking him if he minds having a wee bit of his castle blown up,"
McCason explained.
"Blown up?
Just a wee bit.
And?"
McCason grinned, returning his signalling hand to his gun barrel and shouldering the weapon.
"I told him me Disney."
The Slayer was dead. Those four words struck at Felix's mind like a chisel to a gravestone. The Slayer was dead. A tide of images ran through his brain. Faces, places, the exotic lands they had seen together, the enemies they had battled side by side, the friends they had made, and those they had lost. He remembered a lot of drinking, a good deal of arguing, and an almost endless amount of travelling, often while cold, wet, hungry, and on foot. But for some reason the memory of those forgotten hours in Gotrek's company almost made him smile, but for the burning grief that had his muscles seized. The temple chamber rumbled as if under some kind of bombardment, but Felix didn't care. The Slayer was dead. Again the words of the seeress's prophecy came to him, circling around his mind like taunts, however much he tried to ignore them or forcibly throw them out. His mental flailing only left him vulnerable when something he had thought safely forgotten took the opportunity to strike. The mutant seeress had not been the first to prophesy the Slayer's doom. It had been several years ago during their escape from a black ark of the Dark Elves, when a greater demon of the Prince of Pain had fled from Gotrek with the chilling message,
"One greater than I is to die killing you."
The Slayer was dead. This was it, then. The moment. The gimbal upon which the layers of prophecy and fate tilted in balance. All Felix could think of was how stupid it was, how utterly vain and pointless a death. He wondered what he was supposed to do now. Was he doomed to waste away to eventual insanity in this antechamber? For all the demons, mutants, and mad priests who had jostled to give their Fenixworth on the Slayer's doom, none of them had had much to say about Felix's. Only the seeress's cryptic assertion that he had a choice to make. He couldn't take his eyes from his companion's body. They stung. It was as though they were attached, melted, welded, but he couldn't move them. He knew what he had to do. It was the only thing a friend and a rememberer could do for a slayer. This was a hall of vengeance, and the demon's prophecy was only half fulfilled. Felix turned on the spot and looked up, only becoming aware that his sword was in his hand and positioned into a guard when he heard Grimnir's chuckle. It was a mirthless mocking sound, that of a corpse being dragged across gravel.
"You will fight me too, manling. And how much better than your companion do you think you would fare?"
Felix ground his teeth but refused to lower his guard. "Does it matter? I've nothing left." With a snarl, the vengeful ancestor surged forward, axe raised high. Felix tensed behind his blade, but held his ground. He knew that it was a hopeless, a futile gesture to avenge a futile death. Grimnir's mighty axe would cleave through his own pitifully enchanted blade like a wafer. In a second from now, he would be dead, and he doubted that Gustav or Malachi would be around for long enough to miss him, much less mourn him. The mad thought then arose that he might as well use that second to attack. He was as good as dead anyway, so why not use that last hot beat of life to inflict upon this stone-hearted god at least one moment of the hurt Felix felt now, after he was gone? Felix shifted position, lowering his hilt and angling the sword point up and out. Kolya had once described to him how men hunted wild boar. The beast was goaded into a charge, crashing through the woods towards the cordon of hunters that waited with spears. There was little skill, just courage, the will to stand before a charging beast, nothing between you and your ending but a point of metal. The ancestor loomed over him, less a boar than a savage bear, mighty chest opening up and rippling with muscle for a rending downstroke. Felix roared and stabbed up with his sword. Grimnir pulled out of his attack at the last minute, batting away Felix's sword with a negligent wave of his enormous axe. Then, to Felix's astonishment and no little annoyance, the ancestor started to laugh. He lowered his axe and put his hands on his hips, waves of mirth shaking his stone-barrel chest. Felix glared, eyes stinging as he worked life into the numbed fingers around the grip of his sword. That single parry had deadened them.
"What's the matter?" said Felix,
the hoarseness in his throat lending his voice a bravado he didn't feel. He had been expecting to be dead by now, and the terror of what he had just tried to do was only now beginning to circulate through his system.
"Are you worried I'll stain your axe?"
The ancestor's laughter settled into a low chuckle, a giant hand separating from his hip to wipe what looked like a golden tear from his eye.
"Clearly, I've been stuck too long in the realm of chaos, for never would I have expected to find such courage in one of the younger races. Tell me, manling, are all your kind as you are?"
"Well, I don't think I'm anything particularly special."
Grimnir again threatened to break into a laugh, but managed to restrain himself. Felix glared angrily. The Slayer was dead, and now his killer laughed.
"What would any man do to avenge a friend?"
Felix returned with a snarl.
"Your body is frail, Madling, but your heart's in the place it ought to be. I'll grant you that."
The ancestor sighed, huge chest heaving as he lowered his axe to the ground with a clang. The runes that adorned its killing edge faded, as though attuned somehow to the ebb and rise of its master's wrath.
"Maybe you aren't worthy, but it's not as though I have another 10,000 years to wait for one who is. Dwarfs are ever practical, and perhaps you are worthy enough."
Grimnir knelt in the pool of blood beside Gotrek's body, and laid one massive hand over the slayer's face. So large was it that it obscured Gotrek's entire head and part of his crest. Felix started forward with a warning growl and raised his sword again.
"Leave him alone! Haven't you done enough?"
The ancestor warned him back with a look. It was not a threatening one, but nevertheless it commanded obedience, and Felix found his sword lowering. Grimnir hadn't moved.
"What are you doing?"
"Hush, Manling. And be patient."
A golden red light shone through the join between Gotrek's cheek and the palm of his ancestor, expanding to envelop the slayer's head and then his entire body in an auric cocoon of energy. Felix grunted in pain and raised a hand to shield his eyes, but even as he did so, the brilliance began to recede, and he warily repositioned the hand around his sword. Grimnir rose, a bloody imprint on his knees, and nodded towards Gotrek. Felix turned away his blade and looked. There was a rasping intake of breath that filled the slayer's chest, and then a fit of coughing, as a man dying of thirst might drink too much and splutter. Gotrek sat upright, hacking and heaving. His own blood glistened on the stones around him, but the wounds on his body were healed. With one harsh, valedictory cough, Gotrek took a breath and swallowed. He looked around, confused. Felix gasped, hand to his mouth.
"Gotrek, your eye!"
The slayer clapped his hand to his good eye, and then, like a blind man muddling in the dark, worked his fingers towards the other, which had for 20 years been an empty socket. Until now.
"What in gri—"
Gotrek glanced up at his benefactor and grumbled something under his breath.
"What's going on?" "Arise, slayer,"
said Grimnir, extending a helping hand.
"In this place there is always more killing to be done."
Gotrek clasped the ancestor's arm and allowed himself to be hauled up. He clenched his fists, swung a practice roundhouse and grunted satisfaction at his healed muscles, then turned with his good eye scrunched tight and stared at Felix to test the acuity of the other, which the power of Grimnir had restored to him. That and more. The slayer was alive. Felix couldn't speak for the exuberance bubbling up beneath his breast.
"You're skillful and uncommonly strong, slayer," said Grimnir,
nodding appreciatively to Gotrek's axe as the dwarf bent to collect it from the ground.
"Bearing my axe for so many years has toughened you, but you're aware that its most powerful enchantments lie dormant. You speak of the rune of unbinding. Aye, King Thangrim of Karagdum spoke of it. But with the passing of his rune lord, so too went the craft to awaken it."
Grimnir smiled. Felix thought it a uniquely terrifying expression. The ancestor held out his hand.
"Pass it here."
Gotrek hesitated a moment, understandably so, considering, then mouthed a curse and slapped the weapon down into Grimnir's waiting palm. The ancestor's fingers closed around the haft, his other hand moving to cover the flat blade. He uttered a word that Felix didn't catch, whispered it to the meteoric steel through his fingers, then swept his hand aside to reveal a fiercely glowing runic mark square in the center of the blade that Felix would swear on the very existence of the Empire had not been there before. Felix could feel the power pulsing from it. It was cleansing, like slipping into a hot bath after months of mud and road. The magic inherent in this strange place receded from its proximity, the pillars wavering yet becoming somehow more solid. The walls, too, appeared less distant than they had, standing more or less as Felix would have placed them according to the temple's outward appearance.
"The rune of unbinding was crafted to slay the chaos gods," said Grimnir,
returning the reawakened axe to Gotrek's grip.
"You'll find it useful."
"You should have taken it with you in the first place."
"Originally I'd planned to, but strong as I felt, I knew there was a chance I'd fail. And if I did, then I needed there to be something of me left behind for my heir to follow in my steps. My avatar in the end times."
Gotrek snorted derisively.
"Moan all you want, but there it is."
Then Grimnir presented to Gotrek his own axe. It was similarly massive, and with the same extra-earthly metal employed in its making. The runes that emblazoned its surface were similar, but even to Felix's eye, noticeably different.
"The end times these are, and it's right that both of my axes should be born together again by my heir."
Gotrek examined the weapon and shook his head sternly.
"I'm no thief. This is the axe of Thorgrim Grudgebearer, the weapon of my High King."
"It is Morgrim's axe, the weapon of my son, and it is mine to give."
"How did he get here?" Felix chimed in, his voice sounding terribly light and obtrusive after the rumbling discourse of the two dwarfs. He cleared his throat and unconsciously dropped an octave.
"Is it an illusion like the one of Middenheim?"
"That was no illusion, Manly. And neither is this."
Gotrek nodded his understanding, his voice when it came as hard and sharp as a flint.
"Then the High King is fallen. Azamar, the Ever-Rune, has been broken, and the kingdom of the dwarfs is no more.
Not quite yet, as you might reckon it, but it will. The numberless hordes of Grey Seer Thankwall, and one you've not encountered, named the Headtaker, yet besiege it. Its doom, however," said Grimnir, pushing the axe into Gotrek's unprotesting grasp, "is as written as yours."
"Can it not be saved?" Felix asked, aghast. If the Everpeak could be toppled, then what hope was left for the lands of men? Grimnir turned a questioning look on Gotrek. If the Slayer seemed at all perturbed by the slow extermination of his people, then he didn't show it. He gave his two godlike axes a practice swing, and grinned horribly.
"No more tests. I know where my doom lies. Come, Manly."
That last was called over the Slayer's shoulder as he turned towards the doorway.
"One last warning," Grimnir called after him. "That door has stood unopened, guarded by my monks and I for 10 millennia. Opening it will weaken the wards that surround this place, make an opening for anyone else that might be waiting for it. That demon prince that spared you aboard your ship, for instance, he assaults Khazad Drengazi even now."
Felix cast a despairing look to the door. The knowledge that it no longer led back to the fortress and the men he had left there only increased the impotence of his agony.
"Gustav,
can't you stop him?" he asked of the ancestor.
"Not once the way is broken. I am but an echo of Grimnir. In truth, I wait for you at your destination."
"Let the demon come," said Gotrek.
"Belakor is almost as old as I. He'll be at his strongest where you're headed, the very threshold of the realm of chaos, and you'll never get there before he does."
"Let him," Felix echoed, explaining as Gotrek glanced back in surprise. "Well, if he follows us, then Gustav and Malachi might have a chance." Grimnir smiled and gestured to the door.
"Sentimental, aye, but brave. May it keep you strong where you go, Manling."
A thunderous report boomed out from Unstoppable's ventral batteries, and a blaze of organ gun fire ripped into the ruins of the lower wards, churning up men and rubble and screaming horses with supremely indifferent firepower. Gustav's company, spread out along the wall amongst the monks, gave a ragged cheer and let off a salvo of their own. A short burst of cracks and pops from their more conventional arms sounded like a 5-gun salute as the airship yawed to port, bearing away from the temple complex and over the lower wards, maintaining the same punishing rate of fire as it went. The disciplined marauder formations broke up as individual men went to ground. A handful reappeared atop roofs or high towers to fire at the airship's gleaming metal belly, but the distances were deceptive, and their arrows fell way short. A steam horn sounded from above Unstoppable's bridge, a signal of some kind, and a moment later her belly opened. The gondola's underside, something Gustav had considered to be riveted steel as solid as the rest of the hull, turned out instead to be comprised of a series of large hatches, concealing some kind of ballast tank. Now those hatches swung out, and a stream of dark cylindrical objects dropped in weighted silence to the streets below. Bombs. Gustav had read about this in Felix's book. Just one more thing he hadn't believed. He hugged the krennel again and braced himself. Parallel tracks of increasingly violent explosions stamped a path across the lower wards of the citadel, throwing up sky-high pillars of smoke and burning debris as they went. Gustav stared in awe at the airship's power. Who needed an ancient dwarfish prophecy when they wielded something like this? This here would be the salvation of the Empire. Malachi Mackayson and the aptly named Unstoppable. Already half of the lower wards were on fire, the flames sickly and dark in the thin air, and everything not already flattened teetered on the brink of collapse. Ventral and broadside cannons continuing to pound what little remained upright, the airship began the tortuous process of coming about for a second pass.
"Nay, chaos-loving Wazuk messes with me, airship!"
Gustav smiled, but then, for no good reason he could perceive, shivered. A murmur passed through the Slayer monks, and he could tell he was not alone. The temperature, already well south of freezing, plunged even further despite the fires. Gustav felt the air in his mouth begin to crystallize. A nascent headache started to thump at the back of his brain.
"Dark mage!" he yelled.
A black shape thrashed within the flames, like some giant sea monster tearing free of a net. Gustav's Free Company peppered the eminent beast with shot, but nothing made a mark. Mackayson brought up his long rifle with a grunt. A red dot flashed over the emerging shape of a huge horned head. The high-powered weapon fired with a deafening boom, and Gustav gripped the wall in anticipation, only to watch the shell ricochet off the demon prince's forehead. Gustav moaned.
"Bellicor! I thought Max banished him!"
Mackayson swore and reloaded.
"Hold the wall, laddie! It's just you and wee demon!"
Bellicor burst through the flames, fire licking about his volcanic form as he threw back his wings. A sudden gale arose from nowhere to fill them and shoot the demon prince into the sky. Gunshots flashed across his frame as he briefly soared towards the fortified gatehouse of the third wall. There, he tucked in his wings and dived. A Slayer monk with a double-bladed quarterstaff hurled himself from the parapet as the demon prince crashed through the wall of the keep like a cannonball. The fortification slowly began to collapse in on itself. The dwarf clutched his quarterstaff, legs pumping furiously as he dropped, his wall crumbling away behind him even as he did. A deep roar echoed from under the rubble of the keep, and for one implosive instant the world was bleached of colour. A shockwave rippled from the epicentre, so fast that everything in the vicinity was caught in a wave of vibrating force. Then the keep cracked open like an egg, a purple fire spearing through the cracks and annihilating everything nearby in a blast of dark magic. The monk was incinerated, just a fraction of a second before the keep, and a huge stretch of wall was transformed into a glass-lined crater. Bellicor strode through, wings upraised like a halo of black.
"All right, so it's a big demon."
"Shirak, Shirak Remiha."
One of the Slayer monks on the inner wall was remonstrating with his abbot, others joining in on both sides to raise what sounded like a heated argument. Gustav turned to Malachi.